Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. I'm your host, Katie Fogarty. Beauties, every Monday, I feel like I have the best job in the world. Every Monday, I get to introduce you to a spectacular woman you should know, follow, read, have on your radar. My guest this week gloriously fits this bill and then some. She's an OG multi-hyphenate, a creative director, disruptor, editor, and author. Her career spans culture-shifting roles ranging from creative director for women's health to content director of the AARP's Disrupt Aging platform. She is also an influencer and content creator, and because she has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, there is a good chance that many of you are already fans of her work. Please meet Mary Jane Fahey, creator of the kick-ass platform Glorious Broads. Welcome, Mary Jane.
Well, thank you. Great intro.
I am very excited, but I'm also going to admit I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried we're not going to have enough time to get into everything I want to. I want to explore your serial reinventions, everything that you've learned from interviewing so many hundreds of phenomenal women for Glorious Broads. And I know that you recently were involved in Cosmo Magazine's super viral article about great sex after 60. We are going to
Super fun.
So we're going to get into it all. But I want to actually just start with some quick stage setting. What inspired you to create Glorious Broads?
My mother and my grandmother. But it was not because of who they were, but because of who they might have been if they grew up now.
That feels very powerful, and I feel like we got a lot to unpack. So how did they grow up, and what was your experience with them versus how you think that they might have, you know, blossomed if they were you know, doing it today?
Well, I loved them both, and they were powerful within the household, but when their children grew up, they had no idea of how to use that energy in the outside world. And as a little kid, I saw that and just said, wait a minute, who's the power figure in this household? It's my mother, not my dad. And why isn't she outside in the world? And that really taught me something. My grandmother's the same.
That's so interesting. And so how did you, you know, as you came of age and sort of moved into adulthood, where did you put your energies, you know, before you got to Glorious Broad?
Oh, sure. I was very much a part of the publishing world. I probably redesigned every magazine and newspaper you can think of, truly. I had the good fortune of working with a guy named Roger Black. And there I started with redesigning Esquire magazine. We would redesign magazines. And that really worked for me because it wasn't only the look of it, but the content. So at that time, I always thought I could be a writer, but I was too involved and interested and loved the art direction and the look of it. But it was later in life when, frankly, the economy fell and I was competing for jobs that for less money than I should have gotten, that let's put it this way, the rose, it wilted. And I started writing. And with that, I then got this great gig at ARP as an art director, and my terrific boss over there, Myrna Blythe, saw Glorious Broads because I started it there as an idea, and she saw my website, and she hired me to be the founding editor of Disrupt Aging. That took a real faith from her. And she's 80 some years old, and she's still the editor over at ARP. Pretty amazing. Anyway, she took a chance on me, and I grew into the role of being an editor. And having seen how they ran Disrupt Aging and what I wanted to do with Glorious Broads, it was an incredible ladder to walk and to jump from.
Yeah, and I love how you took these two core talents and interests of yours, you know, the sort of creative direction, visual storytelling, and your sort of new interest in interviewing, writing, you know, telling a story using written words, and you've really merged them in Glorious Broads because it's a very visual medium. You've got wonderful sort of photo shoots that you feature on your website and on Instagram, you know, obviously a highly visual medium. We get to see these people. We get to watch you interview them. We get to hear and see their stories. It's really a phenomenally inspiring platform. I want to ask you about your tagline, which is sages, not saints, which I absolutely love, right? Because yes, please, right? These are real women, right? Not impossible archetypes, right? We've all had it with impossible measuring sticks because, you know, I'm not a magazine, you know, creator, but I'm a magazine reader. And women's magazines and pop culture feed us a steady diet of impossible standards.
Absolutely.
You spotlight real women. Why is this so important?
Oh, I'm tired of the, no offense to the ex-models out there. I love them and respect them, but the silver ex-models does not interest me. And I think it's a really false hope to give to all of we regular women. I want to show that the woman that's walking the streets could be glorious and just maybe a kind of saint. Saints probably overdoing it a bit. But I love casting on the streets. And I love, you know, the connection. Oh, this woman looks like she has something to say. And they're kind of everywhere. So to me, it's the regularity of so many women that I choose to interview that surprise me with their wealth of knowledge and always funny. Funny is really important to me.
Oh my God. First of all, there is just no shortage of amazing women that, you know, I say midlife awesomeness is a 24/7 situation. Your glorious broads, like, you know, I think you also say there's like a million, you know, glorious broads out there. Let's connect with them. You talked about sages versus saints. You know, I've had many, many years of Catholic education. I'm done with being a saint. And I am firmly ready to move into my sage era, right? I'm ready.
Yes.
And I'm maybe ready to move into my broad era too. I think you do such a phenomenal job. When you use the word glorious, what do you mean by that?
Well, I love
what makes somebody glorious. Maybe that's an easier way of asking.
Well, for me, what makes somebody glorious is an unconventionalness that you rise above what is considered important in this world, but you rise above it and you set your own standards. To me, that's a glorious, glorious broad. I think of someone like I forget her name. Never mind. But I think of really exceptional women in this world. And those are the women that I'm drawn to. And they're never people who live a, quote, regular life. Now, a regular can be someone who's married, someone who's had a long relationship. But independence, to me, is glorious. That you set your own standards. That you have your own idea of what beauty is. And not what somebody else thinks is. Look at Diane Vreeland and how she looked in the mirror and she saw that what somebody might think is an ugly face, but she viewed herself as an exceptional face. That to me is glorious.
Yep, she had such a style, sort of came out of every pore, and she presented herself with that confidence. Absolutely. Think is so magnetic and captivating.
I just want to add something, excuse me, but when I was stumped at the name, I was thinking of Lena Horne. Now that to me is a glorious woman. And I remember being quite young, maybe I was in my late 30s or mid 30s, and it was when she had a Broadway production just of Lena on stage. And she got out there dressed in a long blue gown and just say, I can still gussy up. And she had a laugh about it. And we all laughed with her and took her beyond middle age and worked it into power. That's exceptional.
That is exceptional. That image you painted is so striking. And she's such a striking, incredible woman. You know, I want to ask you if you think that as we age, we become more glorious. Is it something that we work up to? We're heading into a break, but when we come back, I want to pick this notion up.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Beauties, we all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep stress bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Sure, we can share our stress with our girlfriends or our spouses, but sometimes we need to give friends and family a break. Sometimes therapy is the better option. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. I used therapy when I was a new mom, struggling with the exhaustion and overwhelm of new motherhood. Therapy was a chance to get my worries off my chest and to learn new coping tools. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/acertainage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/acertainage.
Ever notice that how you feel affects your food choices and that what you eat affects how you feel throughout the day? Well, researchers noticed it too, and now there's cutting-edge science about how food affects our emotional well-being. I'm food and science journalist Mary Beth Albright, and in my weekly podcast, Eat, You'll Feel Better, I look at practical, realistic ways to put the science of eating for emotional well-being into action. And, this is important, without lapsing into negative diet culture messages that can really ruin anyone's emotional well-being. We talk about things like how the food in your gut sends messages directly to your brain. And we also celebrate something that I personally find often missing from food health news, and that's leaning into pleasure. Because food is delicious, and it's not just about what we eat. Emotional well-being is also about how we eat. So join me every week on Eat, You'll Feel Better, where we use science to improve mood through food.
Mary Jane, we're back from the break. When we went into it, you talked about Diana Vreeland, you talked about Lena Horne, two women with so much elegance and power and who are sort of virtuosos in their careers and fields. These women, you know, were older when they last sort of were on our radar. Do you feel that being glorious is something that we age into? Is it something that we have to begin with? What's your take on that?
Well, there can be exceptions to every rule. Some of the glorious broads that I talk to are 40, one even 35. But I think you really have to work yourself into it. I think it's a process. I mean, I do feel more glorious this year than I did 2 years ago. But it is a process of not only working on yourself, but understanding life in a larger way. I'm going to get a little Buddha now, but it does have to do with seeing yourself as, in a way, small in this very large life, and that we're all sisters together. I think that takes time to understand. I think when you're young, you just don't get it.
Mary Jane, how old are you now?
I'm turning 74 in April.
So 74, I'm 54. We have a 20-year span apart. I agree. I feel more glorious now than I did 2 years ago. I feel more glorious now than I did at 44. I'm excited to hear from you that this sense of feeling glorious, of feeling, you know, sort of expansive in who we are, it continues as we, you know, progress chronologically. I wanted to a quick segue because I want to ask you about a Cosmo article that you were involved with that I referenced at the top of the show. This was a study based on 3,000 women over 60. It was done in partnership between Cosmo Magazine and the Kinsey Institute. And it really examined everything, you know, to do with sexuality, ranging from libido to your sexual cadence, the number of partners, to sexual fantasies. And I know from reading a little bit about this and reading the article that 75% of women surveyed said that they are having better sex with orgasms that are just as good, if not better, than when they were younger. But pop culture does not typically depict women in their 60s, 70s, 80s having screaming, you know, orgasms or even having sex at all. Why do you think culture gets older women so wrong?
Well, I do think that this generation of older women is redefining what older women is. And I don't mean because of the cosmetics that are out there, but the world has changed so much. We're able to be healthier so much longer. And healthier has everything to do with verve. So I look forward to see how women are going to be looked at in the next generation. But for now, we were taught everything wrong. Everything we thought about what to be an older person was wrong. I never thought I would feel this way. And I never thought that I would have my sexuality so such an awakened part of me on a daily basis. So I think we're still in the habit. I think that what Cosmo did, that was a breakthrough issue, and very surprised that Cosmo did it. But we're still in the habit of thinking of grandmas as my great grandma, not as the 70-year-olds that exist today. The living, breathing, and sexual women that we are.
Yeah.
So I think if brought into modern terms, we wouldn't think that way.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I thought it was so exciting to read. It sort of reinforced something that I had learned from a show that I recorded probably in my first year, in year one. I had the anthropologist and sex expert, Dr. Helen Fisher, on the show. She is one of the leading, she's associated with the Kinsey Institute and one of the leading experts on love in our culture. And she talked about the fact that romantic love, attraction, desire does not fade as we age. It doesn't even fade in long-term relationships, because she had proven that by putting long-term married partners into MRI machines and watch their brains light up with desire for one another, which is such a beautiful image. And I feel like she's out there sharing that attraction, desire can exist as we age. You are part of of this exciting article that I saw everywhere. I saw people sharing it on LinkedIn. You know, it caught people's attention. And when we start to bust some of these age myths, it's so important.
Absolutely.
It's so important for ourselves, and it's so important for the women and the men who are coming behind us to say that this important part of your life doesn't go away, right? So what has surprised you about the reaction to this article? I mean, you were in it. You've been interviewed by Cosmo in a sort of a video diary they did around it. What's the reaction been like from the people in your own life?
Well, I come from an Irish Catholic family, and there wasn't too much chatting within my family. I'm just being honest.
Yes.
But what I did love was the reaction from the younger people in my life. And I have a lot of younger friends, and I loved the young women on the shoot. They were so excited about what they saw, but also what they learned. You know, I loved the reaction of them, that they just saw, oh, I have 20, 30, 40 more years of a sexual life in front of me. You're not going to learn that necessarily from your mom, but you are going to learn it from a diverse group of older, vibrant women in front of you. It was a great day of shooting and of exchanging. So that's what I would say. I'm getting more of a fabulous reaction from my younger friends, from my family. They're embarrassed, but
that's okay.
They've been embarrassed about me for a long time.
That's okay. They're allowed to be. That's their cross to bear, as we were raised to say. That is their cross to bear. But
oh my God, we're all good friends, but you know, sexuality embarrasses them. That's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. But it's, you know, this is another, you've just surfaced another theme that we've explored on the show, that ageism is not just bad for people who are currently chronologically advanced in years. Ageism is bad for everybody, because it impacts us across generations. And so when we put people in these age boxes of saying older people are not sexual, older people can't be, you know, relevant and marketable, you can't have older people in your workforce, that is corrosive to younger people as well, because yes, God willing, they want to get older. And, you know, when we limit what and how and who you can be based on the number of candles on your birthday cake, it's a disservice across generations.
It is. It absolutely is. I want to share with you a funny little story. For Valentine's Day, I wanted to put this little homage up of, you're with a mate or you're not with a mate, pleasure yourself, enjoy yourself for that night, every night, but for that night. And I put myself in a skimpy little piece of lingerie. I thought I kicked ass in it, but a beautiful young follower, and they write me a lot, but a beautiful young follower put it up and said, how courageous this older woman is for putting this up. And I had to laugh. I was laughing with my partner this morning. I don't think it was courageous. I just thought it was sharing. But, you know, younger see older as different. They don't see older as something they're just going to be.
Well, you're changing that. And I'm hoping I'm changing that. And the more we shift this cultural conversation about what it means to be in these sort of little age boxes, the better. Because
exactly. I love what you said about age boxes, and you're absolutely right.
So what are some other age myths do you bump up against, maybe either in your just your own daily life or, you know, from interviewing all of these women? Because the women, and when I say, I'm using the word women as a blanket phrase, because you interview people who are trans women, cis-born women, female identifying people, sort of from all walks of life. But I'm using, so I just want to be clear to all listeners. But so sure. you have had numerous interviews. What are some of the other age myths that are out there that you think that we all need to be resetting?
Oh, yeah, this is a great question. I definitely have an answer for that. I too put people in boxes, women in boxes. I used to say my 85-year-old friend. I have a 101-year-old friend. I used to have a Black friend, an Asian friend, and now they are all in one box. I no longer use those descriptions of age. I may learn different things from different people, but they're just my women friends. And that was a real liberation for me, no longer to put them in those boxes. It helped me and certainly them.
Yeah, we have to unpack some of the ageist things that are embedded in our own vocabulary or our own brain. You know, we are products of the environments that we're raised in, and sometimes we, you know, choose actively to reject that environment or to move on or have new opinions. But, you know, I have definitely had to police myself, you know, from saying things like, "Oh, that was a senior moment," or, you know, yeah, "Oh, you're so young." And that's also, that's inappropriate or, it's belittling to somebody simply because they have fewer chronological years. So I get it. It's a work in progress. We are all works in progress. That's why we're here. We're doing the work, Mary Jane. We're doing the work.
Absolutely. And even the idea of beauty. I know, I just watch myself that when I say that someone looks lovely, it's not because they look younger. It's just because they look lovely.
Yes, that they have a glow about them, a radiance. Radiance, by the way, some of these words are, you know, words themselves are not, you know, ageist. Like, you can be radiant and luminous at any age. But sometimes I think that they are, they imply youth. But, you know, they don't have to if we don't use them that way. So, you know, it's up to us to be having a new conversation. You have interviewed so many women, as I've said a few times. You know, what are some of the themes, the big common themes that have emerged? Is every conversation different, or do you find that there's a certain theme about how these women feel in their lives and why they feel glorious?
Well, I would say if there's one or two themes, there is no doubt about the cliche that when they turn 50, they change. and they change in a good way. They usually hit that don't give a F wall, mm-hmm. and they become much more liberated and loving themselves more. I would say every woman that I have interviewed has said this to me. And they also said that they have had to work hard to love themselves more, and they do succeed in loving themselves more. Even though they have more wrinkles, they may have more issues walking or talking, or the point is walking down the street, but they love themselves more today than they did as that vibrant young woman. And what nobody wants to be 20 anymore.
No, nobody wants to go backwards. Although I would not mind having my 20-year-old eyes, because I you know, there are some things that I miss, like the ability to like read fine print. Like there's definitely things that change, but you know, for the most part, we wouldn't go backwards for any amount of money. But you know, I will say that that's not true of everybody. And so it tends to be, this is sort of like a self-selecting universe of women that I hang out with on the podcast. The guests that I invite, the guests that come across my radar are women who are really reinventing, excited, who are launching new creative projects, new businesses, new endeavors. They are reimagining their romantic lives, their fitness, you know, a whole host of things. And the women that listen to the show, for the most part, I think are really open to this. So, yes. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm hanging out in a bubble. It's a bubble of women that are, you know, embracing this time of life. But I know this is not true of everybody, and I had one very thoughtful listener reach out to me sort of in a DM over social media to say that she literally feels like a shell of her former self. And, you know, that really it hurt me to read it. I just felt such empathy for her, because I definitely have felt like a shell of myself at different points over my lifetime. Right. You know, we all have highs and lows, and we all have moments where maybe you've lost a job, or I had postpartum depression after one of my three pregnancies. I did not feel like myself. I definitely felt like a shell of the woman that I was. So for any listener right now who's feeling like being a glorious broad sounds amazing, but I am feeling so far from glorious, you know, is there any kind of tactic or tool or thought that you might share with this listener who right now is not feeling glorious?
Yes, I'm happy to. After menopause, I went through a very, very dark time. A couple of deaths in my family, but also menopause did a number on me. And I had to work very, very hard at getting in touch with who I wanted to be. Who I was and who I wanted to be. So for me, it was at least a couple of months, probably a full year of meditating more, not watching the television as much, leaving a partner who was lovely, but not lovely enough for me. I needed to be alone, and I needed to do some questioning. My career also at that time really crashed, and it took guts, but it also took, well, it took courage to take the time off and question who I am and what I want. And let me tell you, ladies, it was not a good time. To put in a year, maybe even a year and a half, listening to a lot of Buddha music, and I came out stronger, but it's not an easy path.
Yeah, I agree. First of all, I appreciate your candor and honesty. You know that you went through a period of time where you really needed to put the work in to feel good. And you know, I think that this show offers a lot of tools. I've had so many wonderful experts on the show that help, you know, women navigate the challenges. We've done 40 shows on menopause. Menopause affects every part of your body, your mood, your mind. It's really can be such a sea change. And so there are tools that are out there. And I love this idea that you tapped into, you know, an intentional pause, that you rethought your relationship, that you, you know, sort of put the work in to kind of reconnect with yourself. So I think that's wonderful coaching for anyone who is in a dip right now, who is looking, you know, but it's also great to hear from people who've come out, emerged on the other side, you know, that have gone through it. And I put myself into that camp. The very first show I recorded of a certain age, I called "Is Toxic Rage the New Hot Flash?" because I literally was, you know, consumed by volcanic mood swings. It was not pretty to be around. It wasn't. Yeah. It didn't feel pretty to be in my head at different times. And you know, I came through on the other side. So, any listener who, you know, just know that this too shall pass, which is a mantra that I've used, which I will loan to anyone who needs it. So this too shall pass.
May I add one other thing too?
Yes, please.
I come from a community of sisters, a bunch of sisters, all good friends, lost a few of them. But if I didn't have my community of women friends during that time, I would say if you're going through something and you have even a small community of friends, reach out. There's a woman I want to mention here. Her name is Yamuna, Y-A-M-U-N-A. And she had a breathing coach. She was teaching us breathing. And we would get together once every probably 3 weeks, and I would incorporate it daily into my life. That so shifted my mood swings. A community, really, let's reach out to each other.
Yeah, I love that. That's a perfect note to end on. We are, you know, midlife, like all parts of life, is more fun with friends. And there's, you know, the support of my women friends has buoyed me up at different times. And it just made life more fun, more enjoyable.
As it does.
As it does. So prioritize that. Mary Jane, we are moving into our speed round, which is how we close the show. It's just, you know, I know that you've listened. It's just 1 to 2 word answers. So we can end on a high energy note. So let's do this. So here, okay. So my first question to you is, this quality to me always makes abroad glorious.
Chutzpah.
Ah, love it. Love it. Love it. I would love to profile this glorious broad.
Chelsea Handler.
Ooh, yes. I would be here for that one. All right. When do you feel your most glorious?
Believe it or not, first thing in the morning.
Ah, I can't get behind that. I'm not a boarding person, but I love it. I aspire to that. All right. Is there a quality or trait that you have now that eluded you in your younger years?
Discipline.
Yes. Okay. A glorious broad is ever evolving. Do you have a next act in your future?
Playwright.
Playwright. Nice. Come back when we've got plays to talk about. Because I follow you on Instagram and I spent some time on it recently to prepare for this, and because I've been on your gorgeous website, I've heard you say that a glorious broad is an excellent drinking pal. What are you drinking when you're with this pal?
Well, I've changed from vodka martinis to gin martinis. I've changed from an olive to a twist.
I love it. I love it. Finally, your one word answer to complete the sentence. As I age, I feel.
Hopeful.
I was expecting glorious, but hopeful is a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much, Mary Jane. Before we say goodbye, how can our listeners find you, keep following your work, and Glorious Broads?
On Instagram and on TikTok, I am on gloriousbroads.com. And YouTube, it's glorious.broads. And my website is Glorious Broads.
Phenomenal. I'll put that all into the show notes. I will also link out to the Cosmo article. This wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. Before you close your podcast app, can I ask you to write a short review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen? Every review helps other women find the show. It's super easy to do. Just scroll down to the bottom of the show and follow the prompts. Special thanks to Michael Mancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time, and until then, age boldly, beauties.